Hello and welcome to the AV Forum's Home AV podcast for Monday the 18th of March. In this edition, I am joined by Martin Jew. Hello, Martin.
Hello.
Now, we've also got Dr. Julian Scott. Hi, Jules.
Hi there.
And we've got special guests. Now, if you're a long-time member of AV Forums and you've watched videos from the past, you'll know these faces. We've got special guest Neil Davidson. Hi, Neil.
Hi, Phil.
And we've also got Steve Carter. Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
How are you doing?
Good, good. Right. So this week, what are we talking about on the Home AV? Well, Neil is Custom AV and Steve is Cydia. So that kind of gives you an idea of what we're talking about in this edition. We're talking about the future of home theatre and home cinema. Is the market changing? We had this thing called COVID, which seems to have changed a lot of people's perceptions of how they're using the house and interacting with their entertainment and their media and so on. So what is happening in the market? What are the guys seeing out there who are installing these systems? Is the professional market driving new trends in the home when it comes to consuming film and music? We're going to cover all of that in this show today. And we're also no longer live streaming, so these are pre-recorded. But if you do have questions and comments, we will feature them in future podcasts. So if you're old-fashioned, you can email us, podcast@avforums.com. Or the easiest way is to head to AV Forums, the forum list, go all the way down to the bottom, find the podcast forum, find this episode, and put your comments in there. If you're not a member of AV Forums, it takes you about 2 minutes to sign up. So get yourself signed up and then ask your questions in there. And of course, if you're on YouTube and you're watching this video, the comment section is below. You can also leave your comments there. Our producer, Andy, will go through all the questions. You'll collate them and we'll put them into the next podcast. Now, mentioning YouTube, if you do watch us on YouTube, this podcast is no longer on the main YouTube channel. We have a YouTube channel just for podcasts. It's called AV Forums Podcasts. We thought long and hard about the title of that channel, but there you go. That's what it's called. Go and subscribe if you don't want to miss out on any of our podcasts. And of course, we do different categories throughout the month. So you've got TV, you've got Home AV, you've got two movies podcasts, and of course, Ed with the Hi-Fi stuff. And then when there's a fifth Monday in the month, we also do a games podcast. So we'll have a podcast for you every Monday. And these podcasts go out at about 7 p.m. every Monday. So head over to either the YouTube channel or AV Forums or your podcast provider, Spotify, and so on. You'll find us on there as well. So who are we? Well, AV Forums is the largest or one of the largest AV and hi-fi communities in Europe and certainly getting on there in the world terms as well. We've been around a long time, 2000 we were formed. A long time ago, and the editorial started in 2003, and we create the content for you, so we're not under the influence of any manufacturers or advertisers or anything else like that. We are honest, independent, unbiased, and hopefully after all that time, we've got a little bit of experience and knowledge behind us as well, and certainly our guests do have as well that come on the podcast. So we're here to answer your questions and give you some good advice in terms of your hobby. So I'm Phil Hinton, I'm the editor. I've been around a good 20-odd years, ISF, THX, PVA certified calibrator. I've been reviewing TVs a bloody long time. So we've been around a while. I do most of the YouTube stuff and, of course, the podcasts. And Jules, quickly introduce yourself.
Yeah, hi Phil. I became an AV Forums member in 2004. Was an official, an avid home theatre fan for all that time. And then 2011, which is when I curiously met Steve Carter at JVC when he was back then on the THX video calibrators training course. Progressed on to being an instructor with THX and now with the Professional Video Alliance, also a calibrator with them and an instructor too, and also do audio stuff.
Excellent. And of course, also on the podcast is Martin. Quickly, briefly, tell us who you are, Martin.
Yeah, hi. I joined the industry in 1995. I got a job with the Lucasfilm THX back in those days. So I started working in the home THX division, then moved into pro. I then stayed in the pro side of the business and worked for NEC Corporation selling their 2K projectors into cinemas in the Americas. Since I moved back from the US, I've predominantly been a journalist. I write reviews for magazines as well as for AV Forums, of course, and I also consult to a couple of manufacturers.
And he's an actor on the side as well, aren't you?
Well, I used to do a little bit of acting, yes.
All right, special guest time. Now, like I say, if you've been around on AV Forums, you will know Neil. You'll know the face. Neil's not been around on the podcast for a little while because he's been busy starting lots and lots and lots of companies in the custom installation field. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Neil, and what you're up to.
But also now, Phil, I'm pleased to say that we have less companies. So I own a business called the Surround Group. And through the Surround Group, we manufacture projector screens with Display Technologies. We are involved in acoustic design and acoustic treatment with CATS. And we also are lucky enough to be involved in lots of very nice high-end cinema systems where we do the room development and we supply AV equipment and so on to a lot of the leading guys in the high-end trade. I've been around long enough, which I really like when everyone has been talking about this, to actually go back and look at my own videos occasionally and think to myself, wow, that guy really knew a lot when he was a young guy. So it's wonderful to be back on the podcast, and I'm really looking forward to today's event.
No, and we're happy to have you back on the podcast, as we are. Steve Carter, Mr. Carter, was JVC when he first started on the AV Forums side of things in our videos, launching projectors for that company. And so now you moved over to CDS. So bring us up to speed, Steve, where we are.
Thank you, Phil. 20 years at CDS. JVC, getting completely wrong. At JVC. And as you say, we met there and hosted a couple of AV Forums events for various launches back in the day. And as you say, Julian, with THX as well. Now, would you believe that I've been nearly 10 years at Cedia? We celebrating the 10th anniversary in May. So over that time, basically doing the similar sort of thing in terms of being their business development manager. So engaging with both sides of the industry. And what I mean by that is the trade suppliers like Neil, but also at the same time engaging with the integrators. So I have a great insight into what's going on within the industry from both sides of the fence, and being able to talk about CDA as a resource center for the industry. And considering we're the only trade association for this particular smart home industry, it's a great opportunity to be able to engage with those particular members.
Excellent. And hopefully we'll be able to get some of your knowledge onto this podcast today, because we're going to talk about how people are using AV in the home. But before we get into the show today, we have to do some quick competitions, and Jules is going to tell us all about that. So we've got cracking prizes here.
Yeah, absolutely, Phil. You can win a pair of Q Acoustics M40 powered speakers worth £749, courtesy of Peter Tyson. These ultra-compact micro tower speakers feature 2x100 watts of built-in amplification, the C-Cube continuous curved con mid-stroke bass driver, high-resolution wireless streaming via Bluetooth 5 with APTX HD, and numerous connectivity options for most sound sources, such as a TV, turntable, which needs a built-in preamp, games console, set-top box, CD player, network streamer, and this closes at £23.59 on Monday, April 1st. And you can also win a Valencia Tuscany XL Ux Ultimate Luxury Onyx Cinema Seat worth over £2,200. Valencia Seating Theatre Seating has provided this superb prize designed to elevate your movie watching journey to unparalleled heights. And this competition closes at £23.59, Saturday, March the 30th.
Excellent. So if you want to win those cracking prizes, you want to have a chance for winning those, and head over to avforums.com/competitions to enter. You need to be an eligible AV Forum member over 18, and you also need to be a resident of the UK. So anybody is eligible apart from me, basically. So go and enter that competition. We don't have any previous competition winners, but Martin's going to tell us about some new patrons and who's bought us a coffee recently.
Yep, we have one new patron this week. That is Jaimeen Desai. And thank you for buying us a coffee. We have three who have done so. We have At Chojin, we have Aqua Dulce, and Mr. Black 79.
Excellent. So thank you very much for your support there. It is appreciated. Keep your support coming in. It helps us produce these podcasts, and one day we might even make a good one. Right, let's move on. We are going to talk about today's subject, which is, is home theatre dead? Of course it's not. It's live and well. It's probably better than it's ever been, Neil. Just in terms of quality, we've known each other close to 20 years, maybe 15 years. It's changed a hell of a lot just in that time.
Yeah, it has, Phil. I think that probably one of the biggest things that I've seen change over the years is that there are actually very few really, really bad products now. It used to be that there were genuinely terrible speakers or projectors or anything like that, and I'm pleased to say that there really that doesn't seem to happen anymore. So, you know, there is a fabulous choice for people to look at. You know, even if it's a modest budget, the performance can still be exceptional. But what that also means is that the other end of the market, where people are looking to excel, things have really moved on a lot, I think, over the years. You know, the days when we did a 7.4 system and thought we were, you know, stuck state of the art, those days are long gone, I can tell you. And I think that that's really where we've seen the higher end market changing, is the pursuit of quality has actually evolved a lot in the last few years. Now, we were originally involved with the old RP22, which is a very important CEDIA document that I'm sure Steve can explain to us better. But there is now a greatly revised version of RP22, which is becoming really an important document for anyone involved in cinema design. And that sets some fairly stringent goals, I can tell you, for anyone who is looking to do a world-class level 4 cinema. So that's probably the biggest thing that I have seen over the years. The quality, in fact, has really elevated over that time, such that there are no terrible products anymore.
So education has also come a long way, Steve, and this has been the backbone of AV Forum since we started. I mean, we started the editorial back in 2003 because we were not happy with the editorial that was out there covering our hobby, our subjects. And there was a lot of misinformation. There was a lot of, like Neil was saying, products that were genuinely dodgy out there. I mean, you know, mains conditioners saying that they could change the black level and motion on your TV. You know, that was the kind of marketplace we were in at that moment in time. And that's why AV Forums created the editorial, so we could get good information out there. Education is really important, and it has changed a lot in the last 20 years as well, hasn't it, Steve?
Yes, I would agree. It was funny that you mentioned about different brands really pushing their own ideas around education. So, because at the end of the day, they want to be able to sell products, and you know, a lot of them are very, very good at explaining certain technologies. But I think the key thing to remember from CEDIA-based education is it's agnostic. So when we look at any of the recommended practices, any of the guidelines, any of our face-to-face education, whether it be at the old expo, because I can remember Neil presenting at some of the expos, if I remember rightly, it's all about guidelines, specifics, standards, or just ensuring that you're giving a great overview, and then using those technologies and those guidelines to be able to produce a high performance or even mid-level performance cinema or media space.
Yeah. Would it be fair, Neil, to say at a certain point in time, there was a lot of people offering home integration, home cinemas, putting your plasma TV on the wall and that type of thing, who were not qualified, didn't know what they were doing, and maybe gave the industry a bit of a bad rep back then?
Well, I don't know if that sounds like a very deliberate outcome. I think that one of the things that's been most interesting is when we all got into this, you know, our more senior gentlemen as we are these days from when we all started, there really wasn't like a real thing. There wasn't like a job of a custom installer or a home theatre installer. And I think that we've all been around long enough that initial wave of people, they got into this business like I think all of us. You were enthusiastic. And if you love something, it's not very hard to put the effort in to become an expert at it. Then you get the second wave, which are the guys that you need to build a business and this sort of thing. And they're maybe not so enthusiastic, and it's a little bit more of a job. And they will do training, but there's less of it because it's still not a very structured thing. You know, what is this job? And I think what's very exciting over the last few years is that you have really seen the education around this a little bit more formalized, a lot more formalized, I guess it would actually be fair to say. We've always had these strong beliefs and standards and ISF training years ago in the original RP22s and home cinema design workshops. So none of that really changed, I think, for most of us guys who've been doing it a long time. I think what did change is the guys now who do this, they came in to do this as a job, Steve. I think that you probably see that as well. You know, they've come from college or uni or whatever else into our business, and now they have access to actual real training about how things should be done. It opens up other interesting issues, I don't mind telling you. But I think that for me is probably the biggest change versus what you mentioned at the start. It wasn't professionals, it was enthusiasts, but now it's professionals who are not always enthusiasts. So it's an interesting flip around. Which one gives the best result? Well, that's obviously going to be the luck of the draw.
So Jules, you know, we're a lot further down the line. I mean, Neil doesn't look like he's aged a day, actually. I don't know if he's using some kind of effect on his camera or not.
He doesn't seem his age at all, does he?
But I mean,
it was 45 this weekend, guys. 45 this weekend.
As they say, you can fix it in post.
But yeah, we've been around a while. Jules, what do you see as the advantages now for somebody who's looking to perhaps, you know, get into this or maybe install a cinema or so on? Are they in a better position now than they were 20 years ago when, you know, you didn't really have the guidelines as to what was required?
Well, I can't speak to where perhaps CD was 20 years ago, Steve, but what we do have now is, you know, we have CD as an educational body, which is, you know, been around for a while to elevate the understanding, the knowledge of those who are practitioning in this field. We still have this situation whereby, I guess, you know, anybody can just call themselves a cinema installer. You know, if you can pick up a screwdriver and put a TV on a wall, you can call yourself an installer. If you could, you know, so there's no regulatory body as such, which can be a bit of a Wild West situation if you're looking for somebody to build a cinema. How do you know that person is qualified, is knowledgeable to deliver that sort of first-class experience? And, you know, I would obviously look for the CD accreditation to start off with, because it shows that they are committed to learning, to understanding, and to developing their knowledge and their practice. So I think, you know, with CDIA's very much in that space as we speak now, and that's what I'd be looking for, which I don't know whether it was there, you know, 20 years ago, Neil, Steve, but it's certainly there now. And I would look to that if I was trying to hire somebody.
I think it was alongside some of the most the more established players like the ISF, the THX, Cinema Designers, so certifications as well. So yeah, it was all together. It was quite comprehensive at the time.
Yeah, good. And I mean, a lot of things have changed, guys. You know, just looking at the kit that I get through for review, and I'm talking consumer level stuff, mostly some high end. Martin has had a few high end products through recently for review as well. And you look at the products that we're getting now, some of the video processing that we're seeing because of AI and everything else, we've never had it as good, have we?
No, I mean, I think that you said video processing there with AI. Some of the stuff that you're starting to see in that area is like, well, mind-blowing.
Yeah.
We won't mention any products specifically here, but, you know, that's a world that had kind of lost interest for a lot of people, and then all of a sudden video processing is like a massive thing again. I think if you talk about speakers, actually, just for a second as well, I don't think AI necessarily has had quite the impact, but certainly the affordability of computing and DSP has made a massive difference to consumer speakers, particularly like soundbars and stuff like that. I'm sure many of your viewers won't realize how much investment gets made and squeezing almost impossible physics out of tiny little drivers, because that's what people want to buy. And the actual performance that's available and some of the IP that's been developed around making a consumer soundbar sound 500 times better than it has any right to do based on physics. To me, I find that astonishing. You know, I really meant it. It used to be that you would go and listen to a soundbar, £200, £300, guys. I'm sure you remember it as well. And it was like, oh, okay, it's small and it looks okay, but let's not turn it up too loud. honestly, now you get good products. You see reviews where measurements are made, and the ability of DSP to squeak bass out of these things and minimize distortion is quite impressive.
Neil, it was quite interesting what you were saying about the quality of products a little earlier as well, and also in the context of what you've just said, because this comes up on the forums and on our podcasts quite a lot, is why aren't we giving reviews to equipment, giving it 2 out of 5 stars or 3 out of 5 stars, which was certainly a common thing in the print media 20 years ago. But the reality is that most of what we get through the door now, price performance wise, is pretty unassailable. I mean, it's all great stuff, basically.
Sure. I would agree with that, right? I couldn't honestly tell you the last time I sat down to listen to a set of speakers and really wanted to cover my ears like I would have done in the old days. You know, there was many times I've been in a demo and thought, oh, these people have asked me to come and listen to this. How can I politely do this? It just doesn't. Maybe if people get carried away and they play it too loud, guys, I'm sure we're all familiar with that particular problem. But hey, that's a nice one to have these days. Uh-huh. I think that in many ways, the sheer improvement at the consumer level has actually driven a lot of the high-end business as well. And things like AV forums, I mean, you can't get away with just releasing some old tat these days because everyone just goes online and says, that's a load of old tat.
Yeah,
and that's the end of it. So you've got to be very aware of those types of things. And I think that, well, when we started this whole thing and doing home cinema design workshops, and guys, you'll remember doing trainings for AV forums and video calibration.
Yeah.
It was a rare old beast that had a semi-accurate grayscale mode out of the box. Well, when was the last time you picked up a TV that didn't have at least a decent setting in it?
Yeah.
I mean, look at the work that you guys did in terms of getting manufacturers switched on to having calibration tools in a display.
Yeah.
I can remember having a conversation with you back in the day at JVC.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was great that companies like JVC were actually listening and taking on board that, it had to be sold as an upsell to make the business case for the company to do it. But there was an upsell there, and not just in terms of bringing more value in for the product, but actually value for the end user. The end user was able then to get reference images. And the thing is now with filmmaker mode, what the UHDA have done with that, it was a great concept. The fact that they managed to get everybody bar Sony on board with it, and that every TV I've measured with filmmaker mode, you've got delta E's under 4 across the board. Nothing with a delta E higher than that. That was unthinkable even 10 years ago. The fact that most manufacturers have a mode like that and everyone that you measure has a great deal of accuracy. Now, we're not talking about calibration here, because calibration is not just about delta E's and getting the image looking reference. It's about the whole video chain and the environment and everything else. And I think that's what people misunderstand sometimes. They think, oh, it's got filmmaker mode, that I don't need to get calibrated. But just the fact that you're getting that accuracy from a display nowadays is astonishing. And it's not just TV, projector as well. The work that you haven't been there for 10 years, Steve, but still the work that JVC are doing in that field in terms of their video processing, in terms of what they're doing with the image, and HDR, which is really, really difficult for projectors. Projectors can't do HDR. They have to do some kind of simulated HDR. But the work that's being done in that field using AI and other technologies is fantastic. So Neil, it's from where we are to where we are now, I think we very, very lucky. Very lucky what we got. What does the high end look like at the minute? Because the question we're going to come on to is, has the industry lost its way a little bit? Because there seems to be a few different areas that are either the consumer showing a lot less interest in, whereas there's other areas that are now really starting to boom and we're starting to see a lot of crossover. But before we get into that question, where is the high end at the minute, Neil and Steve? I mean, what are you talking about? What are clients putting into a reference system these days? What does it look like?
Well, I think I think you've kind of got to look and see, and I'm sure we're going to look at some of these things as well. There's a big change happening in how these systems go together. Certainly I have seen that, okay? As flat panel displays get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, you know, there's no doubt that for most people, that's a very, very compelling purchase. A very high quality 4K display, bright, sharp, great color. You know, we've just discussed all of these things. And more at the high end, of course, everyone's talking about LED walls and all of that type of stuff. And they bring their own inherent challenges to install those things properly. But you are seeing more of that type of stuff. I would say that the biggest change that we've seen in high end, probably in the last 5 years, was one, like a massive growth in channel count. I was lucky enough all those years ago to have the first Oro system in Europe. And I was like, yes, Oro 13.1. I thought I was the bee's knees. And then we've just been involved very fortunately with one of our integrators doing a residential cinema that has 55 channels of audio, 55 discrete channels of audio. Now, that one, unfortunately, was done just in the days before waveforming, guys. Right. I could have had another 55 channels of audio in that particular project. So for anyone who's watching that doesn't know waveforming, that's an interesting technology from Trinov Audio that uses DSP and acoustic principles to correct actively for bass effects. We used to do it very well with 4 subwoofers, and you know, if you've still got the time, you can still achieve a lot of the results. But something very, very interesting about selling those 6 or 8 subwoofers on the project now at the high end. So the wonderful technologies and great fun and all that type of stuff, that there's always a danger that more is not always more when it's at the expense of better. That's always something that I would try to caution people to avoid. You know, 20 mid-level speakers are never going to be as good as 20 high-end speakers, but that's what you're seeing now, is it's more and more and more to try and bring that incredible experience, because the normal experience is already so high.
And of course, you're talking about the high end here, so you're more or less talking about a discrete space that somebody has available to turn into a theater. And there's lots of education out there, Steve, for people who want to do that, get integrators in, they can be certified and so on. And you've talked about RP22, so maybe just explain what that is, and so we can get that one out of the way, because we've mentioned it a few times now, and people are probably a little bit confused as to what that is if they're not in the industry.
Right, so if you go back in time, so around 2009, there was a document created called CEB22. So CEB22 was based around construction techniques for a dedicated cinema space, and that was working on a 7.1 system, so 7.1 speaker layout, I should say. So there were a couple of changes in, I think it was probably the last time there were any changes on it was 2017, but they were incremental changes. And so if you look at when immersive audio was actually launched, so Dolby Atmos, I think that's around 2014. So nothing had been done significantly with that document since 2017. So a bunch of great volunteers from various aspects of the industry. I know, Neil, you've been involved within it. There were guys from Skywalker, THX, Dolby, Xperia, DTS, a bunch of really great integrators, Anthony Grimani, a diverse range of volunteers that got involved with the whole project. And this has been going on for probably around 4 years in total. And then last September at Cedia Expo in Denver, Colorado, they announced the document. And the document is this thick. That's RP22. Okay, here's something I prepared earlier. So within RP22, and bearing in mind, this is not going to teach you how to design and build a cinema. You still will need to know the fundamentals of construction techniques. This will still, on the back of that, give you the advanced level, I should say, of immersive audio spaces. Because we've been for many, many years talking about dedicated cinema. We even spoke about it today. So dedicated cinema, and also we will at some point talk about a media room or a system with just a soundbar. The other thing that we've also spoken about, just to diverge a little bit, is that we've been talking about multi-purpose spaces and how performance is very, very good at this moment in time. So what does that then mean is, how good is the integrator in producing the products or producing the projects to be able to give that client the experience that they've signed up for, to be totally honest with you? So for us at the moment, we're not talking about a dedicated space or a multi-purpose space. We're talking about an experiential space within it. So within RP22 or immersive audio recommended practice, we recommend how the system should be designed to give you consistent results again and again and again. That's all it's about. It's not about giving you a standard that you should do. It's about guidelines to say, if you follow these guidelines, you can then have consistent and repeatable results with designing an entertainment space.
And how's that? Who has access to this then, Steve? Is it just
to download?
Okay.
It's free to download from the Cedia website. So, you know, there's not even a barrier of entry of Cedia membership. So with any of our guidelines, they're free to download. And so we've had, over 2,000 to 3,000 downloads so far since the initial launch. And when you talk about, is cinema dead? I can tell you the workshops that we have currently hosted across the UK, every time we announce a date, we sell out within 48 hours. From integrators that are not desperate, but are really wanting to find out what the next level of cinema design will be. We have great engagement opportunities with the members.
And just wrapping up on the high end, Neil, I mean, we touched on the fact that when everybody started off, there was the enthusiast who did this, and then it turned into a professional career for a lot of people and so on. So where are we now in terms of integrators? I mean, what is the quality like compared to 10 years ago for a client who says, look, I have a dedicated space, I want to have a home theater?
Massively higher, let's face it. What's very interesting is that you will now find a lot of companies who specialize in home cinema as opposed to smart home. And I always thought that those were two different skill sets, and the market's kind of catching up now. To be an expert in smart home is a very, very difficult thing. You've got to have such a broad range of skills to be good at. Whereas home cinema, it's a narrower focus, but you've got to be good at executing so many details of the things. And there are a lot of good companies now who really, really will focus on that particular thing. Now, what I would also stress is that those companies, they don't just work on like crazy £1 million fantasy theatres, you know, £20,000 all in, really high tech, well done, well designed home theatre is a real thing. There's lots of good companies that can do that now and really deliver a wonderful, wonderful experience. Just to pick on something that the guys have also been saying, for me, something that changed a lot between dedicated theatre, multi-use space, it's actually the content.
Mm.
So for all of us, we've all lived through COVID now. We've all lived through, you know, the Screen Actors Guild strikes and everything. We've been like starved for good movie content for various reasons. And we're all used to these amazing TV shows falling out of streaming channels. When you actually see how much some of these episodes cost to make, they're like movies. They're just like movies. They just happen to get 6 hours or 10 hours or whatever else to tell a story in. And I think that you see that in its own right dictates that different spaces are relevant. So, for example, would you necessarily want to sit in your theatre for 6 hours or 10 hours to binge watch a show? I'm sure a lot of us would, but but it's not very sociable with your family and so on. Whereas, you know, that really nice couch area that you can kick back and all the rest of the stuff, you don't need to sacrifice the quality anymore. That's what's super amazing. You don't need to. You can still have amazing quality. It's just the different setup that you're going to be enjoying.
And I think this leads us on to moving the conversation on. So we've discussed the high end. The high end has gone nowhere. It's still here, and it's very much, you know, amazing. Some of the systems.
Gone higher, Phil.
Yeah, it's amazing some of the things that can be done. And of course, the technology that we see coming in, even in the consumer level TVs that I've been looking at so far this year, you know, the AI aspects of it. It's maybe not something as a purist you would switch on, but what can be done with that? So you just have to think incrementally higher up the market. That's going to be absolutely amazing what you can do with that technology.
But also, Phil, sorry, just to say also in the high end, in terms of audio as well, I think the leaps in technology in the last 5 years, you look at the likes of Storm Audio, Trinov, Lingdorf, and these preamp processors they're building now sound extraordinary and an incredible hike up from what we consider, you know, the mid-range or whatever.
Yeah.
Very noticeable.
I just wanted to add to that as well, because I'm in a unique position. Well, to be fair, Neil will probably do the same thing as me, to be fair. But because I travel across the country and I will speak to some integrators that are starting on this journey or some companies that are very well established. And one thing I'm seeing at the moment is that there's a definite trend in these companies ensuring that they have some form of showroom to be able to give their potential client the experience of whatever they need to have within that space.
Mm.
But one thing that's very evident is it's not about the price. So what I'm trying to say is we've been talking about high end and the various brands that we've just commented about, but I have seen and experienced some really good entertainment spaces that would be within most people's price bracket. So what I'm trying to point out is it's not just purely around the level of the cost of the equipment that's in place, but it's mainly around the design and the implementation of the products in those spaces.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you brought that up, Steve, because that's exactly where we're heading with this conversation now, because I think technology is at such a level, and Neil mentioned it, and I mentioned it at the beginning, you know, the whole COVID thing, people having to spend time in the home, it's made people rethink. I think there's definitely a certain trend where people are thinking about the space that they're living in, how they're interacting with their TV or with our audio system and the hi-fi system. And we're seeing a lot of crossover as well. So you're seeing hi-fi brands produce integrated amplifiers with eARC. We didn't see that 5 years ago. That's now a common feature. A lot of people are disappointed if a new amplifier comes on the market, a two-channel, that doesn't have eARC on it. It's kind of expected that's going to be there now. And I think it's because consumers have definitely changed the way that they're thinking about this stuff. And we will always have dedicated home theater rooms where people have the space to do that. But not everybody has the space to do that. And a lot of these guys on the forums and a lot of guys out there in the community, wider community, they've had to cram 5-7 speakers on the horizontal, 4 speakers on the height into a living room. And it's not ideal when you have a family and everything else and that kind of stuff's taking up the space. So we've definitely seen a trend on the forums of people building media rooms, building multi-purpose rooms where they're not downgrading, but they're downsizing in terms of the amount of equipment they have, the amount of speakers, but they're still looking for one major thing, and that is excellent quality. Yeah. And it's possible now to do that, isn't it? And this is a huge growth area in the market at the minute.
Well, I tried to touch on that when I said more is not always more.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important, I think, that we understand that. It's cool. It's brilliant to brag about it, isn't it, guys? But having that quality is always really important. I know for me, my family's getting a little bit older now, and it's been the first time that we've actually been able to give up the space in our household to have, it's not quite a media room yet, but we're getting there for that. But it's still a very important space where the family sits together and enjoys each other's company. And I guess there'll be a lot of middle-aged guys like me where that is kind of the minutes where you get to spend time with your kids and your wife and all the rest of the stuff. you know, away from the phones and all the rest of the thing to enjoy some time like that. And I think that, you know, all of us these days recognize that people are willing to pay for an experience. That's much more what we're interested in now. It's not so much the bragging rights of owning that fancy thing, whatever it is, it's the experience. And it's still pretty unrivaled if you get a very well executed media room or cinema, whatever you want to call it. Just a place that you can get a big picture, a cool sound, and you can sit in comfort with your family. Difficult to beat that experience, I have to say.
Yeah,
and of course, media room is a wide way of describing quite a few different setups. We're not just talking about a projector on a screen and so on. You're talking about maybe an integrated TV on the wall, maybe a media wall, maybe a well-designed acoustical space, but done so that the decoration matches the feel of the room and a nice two-channel system. It can be a number of things where you know, the family can relax, and it's not just a wall of speakers or a wall of boxes and AV amplifiers and all the rest of it. It's actually interior design is also a major part of this. And a long time ago, all three of us, maybe even Jules, when he first started, we would have said, keep the interior designer out of it because they'll want to paint everything white and that'll ruin the image.
It's got to be black.
We very much had that opinion. But nowadays it's like, no, bring that interior designer in here. Mm. Let's see what we can do with this space and how we can design it and how we can integrate with our audiovisual experience.
Yeah, very much so, Phil.
Go on.
I'd still say with your dedicated cinema room, interior designers can be a problem. So they still want the white walls and the chandeliers on the side that rattle with the subwoofer and all sorts of things. You know, performance is secondary to how the room looks with the lights on. But you know, in your media room, in your sort of your normal living room, what's been touched on already, you know, Neil keeps mentioning, and I absolutely agree with, it's experience.
Yeah.
Whether you can achieve that experience with 55 channels or, you know, a soundbar, if it's delivering that, at the end of the day, it's about delivering that cinematic content in a way that takes us into that other place. And there are some excellent soundbars now for very reasonable prices that can deliver a superb cinematic experience. So it's very much, there is no one rule fits all. There are so many different parameters and so many different variables that we can actually go to now. You've got ultra short throw projectors, which will suit some people. Mm. We have TVs getting larger and larger. Again, that's going to suit some people. Some people will be happy to have a you know, in their living room, a projector on some sort of projector mount or lift, where it just disappears and the screen disappears into the ceiling. You've got an ALR screen there, which can also work well in a sort of a more ambiently lit room. There are so many different options that people can go to now, and you can have that sort of less dedicated space, but you can still have a great experience for your movies.
And I think of systems also like the Sony HT-A9, which I think retails for a couple of grand, but you've got really great hardware, four speakers with a spatial audio processing and very lifestyle friendly, nice looking pieces of equipment. And I can see that being a, you know, very clear trend moving forward, that kind of system.
And Neil, we've got companies like Dolby. I don't know how much input you've had with Flex Connect, but where you can position speakers anywhere in the room, they don't have to be in the traditional space, but Dolby are saying that with this technology, with the DSP, you still get a Atmos effect.
I'm smiling because actually at Cedia US just last September, it wasn't a Dolby, but there was another similar technology that was being touted, and the gentleman was actually using one of the cafeterias in the show center to demonstrate this to people. So he would kind of like sneak up and pop 3-4 speakers around and create this bubble of immersive audio. It was one of the coolest demos I've seen because it was just like a sneak guy with his three speakers plonking them on a table, and then it's like, well, there's all this stuff going on. But look, what does that come back to? You couldn't do that 10 years ago, even if you were the cleverest guy out there, because you just didn't have the computing power to do it. Now we can fling, you know, DSP like you can't even believe, and embedded processing power is through the roof. Like it never was before, to let these things come to life and yeah, make it possible to deliver these experiences that were never possible before.
And that goes to something that Martin said earlier as well, about the likes of the Trinovs and et cetera, giving us performance levels that we, you know, we couldn't have dreamed of previously. But also that processing power allows us that this trickle-down effect of, for example, room EQ systems. So even on really modestly priced AVRs now, you can find something like Dirac on it, which, you know, takes you way beyond where we were, you know, many years ago. So it's trickling down into lower-end product and giving everybody a better experience.
And I guess coming back to the whole title of this podcast was, is home theater, is home cinema dead? As we knew it, absolutely, because the future has definitely ended up being a lot brighter than we expected it ever to be back in the day when we were first starting out with AV Forums and Neil was starting out with what he was doing and Steve was at JVC and we thought that was the pinnacle back then. We thought, wow, look what we can do with these projectors, with an anamorphic lens, with a CinemaScope screen, a 7.1 sound system. And now 20-odd years later, or almost 20-odd years later, we're still giddy and getting excited about the technology and the experience. And Neil used the word, you know, a lot today. But that's what it's all about at the end of the day. And there's so many routes into it now for people. It's so much more accessible. You can have the dedicated cinema. You can have the dedicated room. You can have your living room where you can have it designed in a way that is pleasing to you in terms of interior design, but also give you an A1 audio experience, whether that's 2-channel, 5-channel or more. So for this year, we're going to delve into these subjects in a little bit more detail. We're going to find out a little bit more about the tech that Neil's been talking about. We're going to find out a little bit more about the educational side with Steve as the year goes on. Hopefully the guys are going to pop back in on a regular basis on the podcast. So it's not just the same people talking on the podcast. We're going to bring the knowledge in. So if you've got questions for the guys, if you've got suggestions, if there's something that you think, well, look, I no longer have the space for my home cinema, what can I do to achieve good quality audio, good quality sound, good quality images, have that cinematic experience, but not have to put up with all the boxes and what are my solutions there, then of course the regular place to do that is on the forums. Head to the podcast forum, this episode of the podcast, put your question in there, or if you're watching on YouTube, in the comments below, and remember to subscribe to AV Forums podcast YouTube channel to get these podcasts on a weekly basis. We hear every Monday, but my thanks to Neil Davidson. Neil, great to see you again. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you so much, Phil. Thanks, everyone.
And Mr. Carter, Steve, great to catch up with you again. It's been a long time. We're going to do it more. We might actually some videos a little bit later in the year as well, and maybe get some face-to-face time and a proper catch-up. And also, Jules and Martin, thank you very much for your time, guys. That's it for Home AV podcast. Our next podcast, the next episodes are the Movies and TV Show Edition. That's on the 25th of March. And that'll be followed by the 4K and Blu-ray physical media show, which is on the 28th of March. Physical media is making a comeback. I love it.
Yes.
I got my thing through from Disney, what, £109 a year? Away you go.
Yes.
I'm gonna get my discs again, get them out and start using them again. So join Kaz and the team for the movies and the Blu-ray shows. That's the 25th and the 28th of March. Those will be available from 7 p.m. on the AV Forums podcast YouTube channel. And of course, via your normal podcast provider in audio only form. So that's it. I'm Phil Hinton. Thank you very much for watching and listening. If you think we deserve a coffee, buymeacoffee.com/AV Forums. But until the next time, goodbye.